at Voices Radio Network.
Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
What is up, guys? Welcome back to Advices Radio. You're listening to episode number 97. I'm Scott McNally, and this show is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES at checkout for additional savings and to let them know that you support the show. I just got the numbers back for our first month with True Nutrition, and things are looking good. So thank you, guys. I really do appreciate you guys supporting the show and being able to buy from a good company that I believe in. All right, guys. Today, we have with us Ron Partlow, IFBB Pro. This is a dude who has been around bodybuilding for a long time. Let's put it this way. He was training for 25 years before he turned pro. He had been competing for 18 years before he turned pro. This is a guy who fucking loves the sport. I'll take any excuse or reason to get Ron back on the program. And we just got back from the Arnold Classic, so what a better reason than to talk some bodybuilding. And after that, I wanted to bring up the topic of training partners. I thought that because Ron is so passionate about the sport and about the actual lifting of weights, he would be a great person to bring on to explore this topic. So we didn't know where it was going to go. And the program takes an interesting spin. You'll just have to listen to it for yourself. But we do talk about training partners. We talk about Ron's thoughts about him, his experiences in the past, and what he does now. A lot of stuff that I think that everybody listening will be able to relate to. And then it turns into this like really positive message by the end, which I'm not at all surprised by, but I'll call this conversation an experiment. We sat down not knowing exactly where it was going to go, and it turned out pretty cool. So I can't wait to share this with you guys, and stay tuned because we have a lot more planned. I've got another interview with Luke Sando that'll be coming out later in the week. We're going to talk about his reflections on Arnold, Ohio, and we're going to talk about his plans for Arnold, Australia. Of course, we have all our other normal shows. There'll be a new episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson. I believe Haley and Ryan are putting together another episode of The Come Up, and the guys from Clinical Muscle will be putting out a show soon. Guys, I couldn't be happier with this. We have so many great podcasts coming out. I'm feeling blessed to have so many cool people around me. Let's get to Mutant Headquarters up in Canada and go to Big Ron Partlow right after this break. Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows. All right, guys, up next, we've got Big Ron Partlow back with us. Ron, thank you for joining me today, man. How you doing?
I'm maximum lively today, Scott.
Yeah?
We're coming off that Arnold high, you know?
Yes.
Yes. And we've got you in your place of business today.
I'm at the office. I'm in one of the boardrooms that I used to use for All Bull back in the day.
Bring back memories.
Matt Meinrod. Yeah. You know, I got to tell you, before we start, my number one biggest disappointment of the weekend.
Yeah, what's that?
Is that I didn't get to see Matt.
I saw him for a split second.
Yeah, so I walked past the Redcon booth twice, and he wasn't there either time. But I was told he was there the whole time. So I'm not quite sure.
Maybe it was like bathroom break or, you know.
Yeah. Him and Aaron were test driving Lamborghinis or something.
Maybe that's what it was. They had these bowls, like a burrito bowl, they called it, up front. And it was $10, which I would expect to pay. But it was worth it. Maybe he was getting one of those, because that's what I would have done if I had to sit at a booth all day, is just eat those things all day long.
You know what I would do for food?
What's that?
I would go to, there was a place, we stayed at the Renaissance, and there's a sushi teriyaki place like a block away.
Ooh, yeah.
Called Rishi Sushi. And I don't know if I said that right. And I tried to do an accent, but it was terrible. And I would just get a bunch of teriyaki bowls for the next day. So I'd go there every night and eat and just get food for the booth.
You know, I never went to a sushi place because I'm the only, I think, bodybuilder that doesn't eat sushi. But I went to one a few months ago, and I got a teriyaki thing. A teriyaki.
That's what I do.
Okay, that was so good. That was amazing.
Yeah, I don't like sushi either. You got to cook my shit.
Okay, you're the other bodybuilder that doesn't like sushi.
Yeah, we can go for steaks. Everyone else can go eat little piles of raw fish.
Yeah, right. So
and pretend it's your cheat meal.
So Arnold Classic, how was your trip overall?
It was good, man. You know, it's one of those trips that does get a bit old because you're not flying into like a tropical, you know, it's not like they have it in Miami or, you know, you're not flying to Barcelona. Yeah. It's just, it's, you know, what it means for us is that we fly into Toronto in February or March, which is just shitty. No one wants to go to Toronto in February.
Yeah.
And you're in Toronto, and hopefully you make your flight out of Toronto to Columbus, and it's on a really shitty little tiny hopper plane.
Okay.
You know, one of those little two seats on each side of the aisle, really, really tight cabin. It's on one of those. Those are the only flights from Toronto to Columbus. Because you're just flying over the lake, right?
Yeah.
And so that's a very uncomfortable flight. And to top it off, February, March is always when the magical weather in the East is happening. So of the 8 trips to the Arnold that I've done, I have missed 4 connections out of Toronto.
You're kidding me.
No. So 4 times I would fly to Toronto. The weather would be so shitty that the plane would be canceled coming in or canceled going out. They put us in a hotel, and then we get up like 5 hours later, rush back to the airport at 6 in the morning and fly to Columbus and then rush to the expo for Friday.
Yeah.
That's half the time. So I was happy that this time it was, you know, flawless for me. I was in properly and out properly.
You know, so I've never missed a connection before, but it's my biggest fear. Scale of 1 to 10, how terrible is it?
Well, I mean, it just depends on what that means. You know, you can miss your connection and there's a flight an hour later that they get you on.
I guess that's not bad.
You can miss your connection and then you're at the Ramada for 6 hours, you got to turn around and come back. You know, really, that's that shitty.
Yeah, that's so bad.
But the Toronto airport is sort of undergoing like perpetual construction. So there's a couple times where it was just walking from the gate we landed at to the gate we were leaving that caused us to miss our connection because of all the construction and the detours, and you're going the long way through this huge airport. And I got to the gate one time and the plane was still on the tarmac.
Oh, okay.
And they're like, no, we've taken you off the flight because your bags won't make it.
Oh.
And they already put somebody else on the plane, and I watched the plane pull away.
Oh, that's like, painful. Oh, fuck. That's painful.
Yeah, so like that happened once, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bad story.
Let's get to the good one.
Yeah, let's get to the good. Let's talk about the Arnold Classic, man. So you know, we had Brandon Curry won this year. It's what I wanted to see even before the show going into it. He was my personal favorite. Did you have a personal favorite?
Well, I didn't have anything invested in anybody. I was sort of verbally rooting for Josh.
Mm, mm-hmm.
just because I like Josh. He's a great guy, and he's got that kind of overwhelming size, you know, with, you know, him being like a big, bigger dude, which I kind of related to, you know. I
mean, absolutely.
You know, that's kind of along my lines, right? You know, and I remember talking with a lot of people about how Luke was looking on Instagram, because his glutes were really in. And I know, like, you know, condition with Luke's always been his challenge, right? Like, he's just so overwhelmingly good and has all that cartoon shit going on. But I mean, until he, you know, really nailed condition, it wasn't going to happen for him. But his glutes in Instagram, his glutes look like they're really lean. And I was like, oh, fuck. I mean, this looks pretty good. But, you know, you still got to prove yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, so I guess I was kind of saying I was rooting for Josh. And then I thought Brandon and Bonac would be the other two in the top three. So that was kind of what I was saying. But, you know, then what happened. And, you know, fuck, I think the story of the show wasn't even Brandon Curry winning. I thought it was Luke getting third.
Yeah, that was amazing, man. That was so cool to see. He has changed so much. I mean, that he brought that conditioning. Like, 2 years ago when we saw him at the Arnold, I remember thinking, like, size-wise, he matches up with everybody. You know, this is his first contest here in the IFBB. And he, you know, a lot of times you see that happen. And I've said this on a previous podcast, so bear with me, guys, that are listening to me say it again. But you see a new guy get up there, and you're like, well, he looks really good for having just turned pro, but he's going to have to put on a lot of size. There was no question that Luke already had that, right?
Yeah. I remember meeting Luke when he was an amateur in body power.
Oh,
he came over to the booth. Yeah, he was sponsored by like a smaller company, and he had a booth right next to us. So I was kind of chatting with him a bit. And I remember just thinking, like, this guy's not a pro yet? Oh.
Yeah.
Because, like, he just looked like a pro, you know? And he looked like a Flex Lewis type of pro, like cartoonish, you know?
Yeah.
And he didn't even have a pro card. And then, you know, some people said, oh, you know, he hasn't quite been on the money yet. Like, oh, well, he still looked like he was like the type of guy that could win a pro card without even being ripped, you know?
Absolutely.
And, but then right away, I think it was the very next year he won it. And, so, you know, it's kind of no surprise, but you know, it's guys like Luke are reminders to, I think they're good, I guess people need to be smart enough to understand what they're looking at. That's the problem. But a lot of these young people that I hear saying like, oh yeah, I mean, I'll get my pro card and I'm going to do this. And I just feel like pointing them towards guys like Luke and being like, you point them at someone like Luke and say, okay, now that guy, that's what you're up against. Like, you're fucking forget it, dude. You know, that's what I feel like saying to some of these young guys. You know, yes, a lot of hard work and 20 years of grinding and stuff can result in you getting where you want to go. But there's people that are just that good. Like, he's like ridiculous. Like, you know, these other guys are awesome. And I know he got third, which means there's two guys better than him.
Right.
But that's the look I've always loved. He's kind of got that second coming of Dorian thing going on, you know?
You're not the first person I've heard say that either.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to throw that name around.
No, like, of course not.
Well, the next Jordan. It's like, oh, really? The next Jordan?
Right, right. You know?
But yeah, like, he's actually got, like, better arms than Dorian had, you know? Let's say, of course, Dorian had, you know, maybe a better back. But, I mean, fuck, like he's very similar in a lot of ways. He's got the same kind of muscle quality. Some of his poses look like his side chest kind of looks like Dorian's.
Yeah.
You know, he's got some poses that remind me a lot of that look. I guess it's kind of a proportional thing too. And the accent doesn't hurt.
Yeah. There you go. Right. Right.
That's my take.
What do you think now? I'm going to go to the opposite end of the spectrum. What did you think about Brandeo?
His front lat spread.
Yeah.
Looks like a, you know, like the next level, but Lee Labrada shape.
Yeah, yeah, I can
so
see that.
So if you look at Lee Labrada's front lat spread and then look at Raphael's front lat spread, the shape of everything's kind of the same. He's just like, you know, new age bigger.
Yeah, that's what VJ actually said. He was like, he looks like, you know, he looks exactly the same, only better.
Yeah, that's funny. I didn't know that. I didn't know if anyone else would make that connection, but if for some reason he just jumped out at me in a few poses. He's fantastic. His front double's crazy. The arms are like bigger than his head, and then the waist is like the size of his arms. It's kind of a funny look.
Yeah.
But Aceto sent me a front double, And you know when someone kind of holds a camera too high, it makes a person's legs look super short?
Yeah, yeah.
So Aceto sent me a front double from like the hotel, and just the angle of it, his arms looked way bigger than his waist.
Okay. Like it's just like even more like, dramatic than normal proportion.
You're yeah, it's just kind of like it was the funniest picture. So, but yeah, he's a fantastic bodybuilder. I mean, that guy has that. I guess what words do you use? What cliches usually come out of people's mouths when they see a physique like that? You know,
I don't know, but
stuff
I,
like yeah. clean lines. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And comparing him to Luke would be like comparing apples to oranges.
Yeah.
That's another good cliche to throw out there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There you go. Yeah. But no, fantastic bodybuilder. I mean, you know, you could justifiably move that guy up in a lot of cases ahead of guys that weren't as conditioned.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you know, and I mean, he was harder than Victor. He was harder than Josh.
Sure.
You know, was he harder than Rolly? I mean, well, now you're starting to just kind of fight an enormous amounts of muscle mass at that point.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So what did you think of Akeem?
I thought he looked okay, but I mean, he didn't. You know what? Here's the thing. I wanted to like him, but it didn't.
Right.
He didn't jump out at me. I feel like his conditioning was better than it had been in the past. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. So the thing with Akeem is, you know how most guys have to diet until their glutes come in?
Yeah.
I think Akeem just needs to diet like 5-6 pounds more because his back is never quite there for tightness.
Yeah, that's always been the thing. Even when he's looked his best, I've seen.
And you can't tell me that he doesn't have muscle density in his back. Of course he does. He just needs to get his skin a little thinner, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's ridiculous from the front and the side. His glutes have striations all over them, so you know his body fat's right there.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's not like it has to come down much, and we're just talking a few pounds. So, I mean, the next show I talked to Akeem,
okay.
And he said he's not going to go to Australia because everyone else is going. Huh. So he's just going to focus on the Indy.
Oh, nice.
So I don't know. I mean, he could win that show. He's just so ridiculous, man.
Especially that's what, another month now till the Indy.
Is it a month?
I think yeah, so, I yeah. Remember. Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it's just he's got so much muscle, man. It's ridiculous. He's one of my favorite physiques in the pros right now, just because he's so like kind of obnoxiously huge.
He's so dense. Yeah, his density he's is crazy. Too.
But yeah, you know, he just needs to get a little harder and then just be a little harder at the shows. You know, I mean, he knows what it takes to win. He can do it again. I was in Tampa when he won that year, and he was really ripped at that show. Like, it was the best he ever looked, I think.
Yeah. Now, tell me what do you think about this? Now, I watching the show in person, I didn't look at any of the pictures until I got home. I feel like, because when I saw everybody on stage, I felt like Braden Curry looked harder than Bonick did. But now I'm looking at some pictures, and I feel like that in some cases Bonick looks harder than Curry did in the pictures.
Yeah, absolutely. So I talked to a lot of people that actually had Bonack winning.
I had heard the same thing. Some of the guys from Muscular Development were saying that, and I'd heard it from other places.
And I saw Neil the next morning at breakfast, and you know, I didn't want to go over and bug him. Like Neil's a great guy. I talk to him all the time whenever I see him, but you know, I'm walking in to eat and I look over and Neil said, gives me the wave and I give him the wave. And he kind of had that look on his face. Like, don't say it. I know. Like,
yeah,
is it as close? I like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I didn't want to go over and talk to him about it. Cause he's probably just like, sick of it, but that was a very close call. And I think that, I don't mean this in any sort of conspiratorial way. I just mean sort of almost like a tradition, you know. A lot of times to win the Arnold, you gotta be one of those kind of Arnold-looking guys.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
I don't know. It's like Dennis Wolf has an Arnold.
Huh.
You know, the short, stocky, less structurally gifted guys don't tend to win the Arnold. And I'm not saying that they win other shows. I'm just saying, you know. My money's usually on the guy that has kind of the bigger X frame. And, you know, so I wasn't surprised. I mean, they're both fantastic. And I think the muscle quality on Bonack is actually better than on Brandon.
Yeah.
Bonack has these really crazy, ridiculous bundles of stuff going into tendons, like in his pec, in the armpit area, you know, and his biceps and stuff, where you see everything like twist and knot and like go down into the tendons.
Yeah, that look. He has a gnarlier look. There's no question about that.
It's really, really fibery, I call it. I don't know what it is. Just it's crazy. But so he has that, but you know, he doesn't open up the same. Like you call front double, and you know how Dennis used to open up and just like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
Like, that guy got huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like Brandon opens up, right? Because he's bigger framed, has wider shoulders, and Bonac doesn't really open up on that shot. So
that's that's interesting.
Yeah, or just and then the front lat spread's the same. Like Bonac's pecs really crunch in front of him and he gets that really crazy thick kind of Franco Colombo look.
Yeah.
But Brandon, you know, gets wide and big and like his shoulders go up 6 inches and he like, you know, inflates like Dennis used to. And so I don't know. I think that's why he won. He gets bigger, you know, he is bigger and he gets bigger.
Yeah. Now that you mention it and you say the Franco Colombo look, I almost feel like Bonac is taller than when he gets into comparisons, he begins looking taller than I would have thought he was. When I see him by himself, I feel like he's a shorter guy because he's so dense and thick and wide.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see him standing next to Brandon. I'm like, huh, they're really not too far of a – there's not too much of a discrepancy between their heights.
No, not – I know what you mean. It's, like, weird. It's like a structural thing more than a height thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? I don't know. People's bodies are so different. I mean, you know, the fact that I can recognize someone's physique from a – silhouette of them moving their arms around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like just imagine a silhouette, like totally blacked out silhouette of someone just like, you know, when you walk into the gym and you're just warming up with a dumbbell or like a 5 pound plate, and you're just like doing shoulder circles.
Yeah.
Just think of how many pros you could pick out just from that.
Yeah.
You could probably do like 15 of the top 20 guys. You get them right.
We could and probably pick out everybody who was on the Arnold Classic stage, you know?
Yeah. You know, and it's just, there's so many different structural differences and how we move. And, you know, when they hit a pose, how muscles, you know, shift and everything, you know, changes. And there's so many different varieties of things going on out there. Like, you know, a guy like Akeem and a guy like Brandon have a million things in common. And then they have a million things that are not the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're essentially the exact same, of what, 99.99% same DNA. They both have ridiculous amounts of muscle in all the right places.
Right.
But, you know, Akeem's got a completely different look. And so it's just, I don't know, it's just those judges, man, like I know people hack on judges a lot and put so much pressure on them. But, I mean, I really think they've got a tough job at that level. You know, they try to do the best they can with these unbelievable examples that are put in front of them.
Absolutely.
Some of it's easy. You know, some of it's easy. Like Josh isn't going to win. He's not hard enough.
Right.
But what's fair? Should he be fourth?
That's where, that's where it starts getting tricky. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, like you said, because they're so different.
Yeah. You want to get them all right, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Great show, though.
Well, hey, I got a topic, and I thought that you would be, and this is actually something I had been thinking about since the last time you were on. Last time we talked, and even the time before that, you've always mentioned stories about your training partners, and there's a certain thing that I feel like you get out of having a good training partner that pushes you further than you might have been able to go on your own. Plus there's this cool camaraderie that you have with, you know, someone else that has these similar goals as you. I thought to myself, this would be a really cool topic to explore with you, Ron.
Well, I've written actually several articles about this stuff, like blogs for different websites and shit about training partners. So, you know, I am pretty opinionated on it actually. I mean, I've been training for 29 years as of this year.
Wow. Yeah.
And I've really only had like a real training partner where it was like every day we showed up and trained together.
Yeah.
I really only had that for probably like, I don't know, seven or eight total years that I've been training.
And you're not saying consistent, just cumulative.
Yeah. Just, you know, like I had, you know, I trained with my two Australian buddies for 2 years, you know, pretty much two solid years. And then I had my best friend trained with me while I was getting ready for my first few nationals. So that was like 2 years maybe. And then I had, you know, a training partner for another nationals one year, you know. And then I had a natural guy that trained with me. He was one of my best partners. And he trained with me for 3 years. And that's pretty much it for,
okay,
like, consistent partners for long periods of time. You know, there's been some team ups here and there, you know, trained with a couple guys for a few months at a time and stuff, but, it's just, I don't know. It's such a personal thing for me. I'm so picky about so many things that it, you know, like, there's lots of times, like, you know, I mean, I can imagine a lot of the top pros saying, "Hey, do you want to train with me?" And I'd be like, "Well, actually, no, I like to do my own thing." Like, you know, like, but I, even as a younger guy, I was just so picky.
Huh.
And about, like, what time I would train and what exercises I like to do and how I wanted to train. Cause, you know, for years I trained, like, well, the majority of my whole life, I've trained very kind of Dorian-ish.
Okay.
So, you know, if somebody's kind of a, you know, a pump type trainer, I just don't want to train with them. It's just, I have no interest in that type of workout, you know, at that, you know, whatever. You know, nowadays, of course, I'm a lot more flexible. I'll train with anybody, you know, have a lot of fun on the road training with different people at the expos and stuff.
Yeah. And that's not necessarily like a
different.
That's not even like necessarily a partnership, is it, when you're on the road?
Exactly.
It is fun though. It is cool to, like, you used, I think, a good phrase was team up with somebody and maybe try on a little bit of what they do and they try on a little bit of what you do, but it's probably not your best workout, right?
No. And I mean, I've been a lot more open-minded the last, you know, 10 years. I mean, the last 5 years I trained for competition, I was a lot more open-minded. And, and then now that I don't compete anymore, you know, I'll train with anybody. I'll try something, you know, here and there. But, you know, the most of the time I was competing, I mean, I kind of had that, like, this is, I have to make sure this is about me. And so part of it was, I just didn't want to, like, you know, anyone that had to train with me, I would let them know. I'm like, you know, we kind of have to do, like, pretty much everything my way. So if that's not going to be fun for you, you know, it's totally cool. But, like, you know, I'm just, like, super focused. Like, I'm not going to do stuff just for the hell of it, you know? And so that's kind of how it pretty much always was. And, you know, it worked out really good for me, but that's one thing that I think people make the mistake is they're not honest and clear with people. You know, you kind of start training with someone, they become your training partner. You have to make sure you're on the same level in a lot of ways. And it doesn't mean you're on the same level of, like, you know, how good of a bodybuilder you are. I mean, I trained with, like, you know, my best friend never competed ever. You know, he was just a normal dude that loved to train hard. And he was a fantastic training partner because it was totally about me. Like, he was just happy to be there supporting me and enjoying the, you know, the fact that he was getting stronger all the time and all that. But it was 100% about me. Like, what time are we training? What exercise are we doing? You know, he was an amazing spotter. I had, like, this perfectly trained spotting machine. You know, he knew every little thing I was going to do. Like, mid-set, he would know, oh, Ron just changed his mind. He's going to do a drop set on this. I can tell. Like, he is, like, that intuitive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, you start communicating with grunts and head nods and little hand gestures. And you start communicating with someone on that level. And it becomes almost like a pit crew. You know, you watch a pit crew do a car. And it's like a finely tuned machine that happens in milliseconds, you know. And that's how, you know, I would get to with a training partner like him. You know, he'd be spotting me on squats and he just knew that I was doing another forced rep. And then he just knew that that was the last one. And then he would know that, he would just know everything that was going on.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes total sense.
I mean, if you can find someone like that, I mean, that's when your training kind of goes to a level that's, you know, maybe impossible to get to on your own. Cause, you know, I mean, you know, you do the best you can on your own, you know, if you can't, so you can't do forced reps. So you can do drop sets and you can do partials and you can do this and that and you can do all these other intensifiers. But I mean, you know, when you're squatting and you got somebody to actually spot you and they're, you know, got their hands on your chest and they're helping you crank out those two extra reps and they're screaming in your ear, I think that's something that is, you know, very difficult to replace training completely alone.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I don't know. It's just there's a certain place you can go to with a really good partner.
I've always felt like the comparison that I've made is, I don't know if you've ever done any hiking, but I feel like if I've gone hiking by myself, I get tired faster. I lose my pace a little bit easier. If you have somebody else that you're keeping up with and they're keeping up with you, before you know it, it's like fun and you're talking and you're having a good time and you're pushing each other through the hike versus, you know, just having yourself to push yourself. It's nice when you have somebody that I think is on that same level, where I think that the power of two people, if you're on that same place, is going to be stronger than the power of just one. Let me take you back for a minute here. I think back to some of my early training stuff when I was first learning, you know, and trying to figure bodybuilding out. Did you ever have a training partner that was like the guy who taught you stuff?
Well, yeah, actually. So it's funny you mentioned this. This is a good one. I got a few stories. So I started in like late grade 9, I started working out, right? So there's a couple of just kids from my class that had already been going to the gym.
Okay.
And they said, you know, and I noticed the one guy's arms were getting bigger. He's one of those young kids that was kind of like, you know, his hormones were cranking before everyone else's, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so he was like getting biceps, and it was just in like grade 9.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, I can get biceps too. So anyways, I went with him and he showed me around the gym. And you know, right away I was like, this is it. So I trained with those guys for the first, you know, probably a year of, you know, probably grade 10, we trained together.
This is but it. Then you knew at that point, you're like, I'm in love with this. This is what I'm going to start doing forever. Awesome.
But, yeah, but it was funny. But I noticed those two guys would always like, they'd skip leg day a lot.
Okay.
And right away I knew that even though as a kid, I was just in grade 10, I was like, fuck, there's something different about me because I don't skip.
Huh.
You know? Interesting. And I would always go on leg day. Leg day would come around and I'd be the only one that would walk there after school. And so I teamed up with this other guy at the gym who was my age, and he was also like really into it. We were reading Muscle Mags, and we became like after school training partners for the most part for you know, most of, you know, high school, I guess. And we would like, you know, save all the magazines for the month, and then we'd like look through them all and we'd find the routines out of them, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Like, I remember pulling like Lee Haney's Olympia routine out of Muscle and Fitness, and you know, we pinned it to the fridge, and you know, it was just like this crazy huge volume, you know,
right?
6 days a week, like the Arnold program almost, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we're at the gym every single day doing like 30 sets of body part, you know.
Oh god.
and you know, that was pretty cool, you know, just that level of enthusiasm. And then we started writing our own programs, so we'd write down, you know, our 10 favorite exercises for every body part, and then we'd design all these workouts trying to use all of those exercises over the course of a couple weeks.
Yeah,
you know. And we got really obsessed with it, and all these, we'd do like a week of all 12 reps and then a week of all 6, and then, you know, like we're doing all this like this periodization without realizing that we were just trying to mix it up and have, you know, cause we read the magazine said you had to do everything, you know?
Right.
So that's what we were doing. So yeah, that was my first real partner, I guess. And then it was pretty much in grade 12 when I met a guy named Eric. So, I guess I was 17, and, one day this guy showed up at the gym, and, I remember he pulled up in a little firefly.
I don't even remember what those are.
This tiny little like Pontiac Fireflies.
Okay.
And he pulled up in one of those, and it was snowing out like crazy Canadian blizzard. Right.
Yeah.
And I remember these two huge guys got out of this little Firefly. They had like big military kind of jackets on, like army jackets, you know, and work boots and shit.
Yeah.
And they had big baggy Gators pants and all that. And they came into the gym and they didn't talk to anybody. And the one guy was just an out-of-town visitor, so, you know, he didn't really live there, but Eric lived there. And so I saw those guys at the gym one day, and they went over the rack, and they started squatting, and they went all the way up to 5 plates.
Whew, nice.
And I remember, like, this is back in, like, would have been, like, 92, and, like, you know, guys in 1992, there was not, like, there was no fucking people squatting 5 plates at most gyms, right?
Yeah.
And
not like Instagram now, where every single person can squat 5 plates somehow.
Yeah. And every kid's on so much trend that it's easy to squat 5 plates.
Right, right.
So, you know, I just remember being like, holy fuck, those guys are actually big. Like, and, you know, over the course of the next several weeks, I saw that Eric guy at the gym every day, and he started talking to me because he saw I was training really hard, you know? And so one day he asked me to squat. He goes, hey kid, let's squat. And then we'll go to Pizza Hut.
Nice.
So that's a story I tell a lot. But yeah, that's like, you know, I had like a leg day partner for a while, and my first real leg day partner, where it was just me every leg day I'd train with him. And it's, I don't know, it's like going to battle, you know, it's like playing on a football team with somebody, you know, you kind of get that camaraderie and, you know, all the stuff that goes with it. You got a friend now, you got someone you can, you know, relate to and trust and someone to go eat with. And so, yeah, it's good times. So, you know, I've had a lot of great training partners, but, you know, there's something about training by myself that's still, you know, sort of, it's like my time away from everything. Yeah. So I think, you know, at this point in my life, you know, no longer competing and stuff, I really like training by myself. It's like, I don't know, there's just, it's hard to shut everything off, and that's a good way to do it.
I can completely relate. It's funny that we're, you know, I wanted to talk about training partners, but that's exactly what I've been into too, is I just put my headphones on and I don't make eye contact with anybody. And I'm not trying to be like hardcore in the gym. I just want to just kind of do my own thing for a while and spend an hour not talking to people, you know?
Yeah, man. Without having to look at your phone.
Yeah.
You know? Well, yeah, but you know, yeah. Fire away.
What I was going to ask, last time, you know, we started talking about this stuff, I remember that you talked about when you had gone to Australia, and I want to say you hooked up with somebody there that was pretty influential.
Yeah. So, I met this guy named, John Davey as soon as I got to the Gold Coast, and he was kind of like, you know, the future pro that was going to come out of there. He'd won some shows and just hadn't turned pro yet. And everyone was saying, oh yeah, you know, he'll turn pro. It's just a matter of, you know, his next show or whatever. And I met this other guy named Nick Jones, and he was a NABA competitor. So he did the NABA shows. He went to like the, you know, he won the Australasias a bunch of times. And he was, you know, he would later go on to do like the world and the universe, like the NABA universe. And, you know, he wound up winning his class at the worlds and the universe and stuff like that. But so I met those guys right away, and I started training with John. And then Nick would join us occasionally whenever his schedule would suit. So it was usually just me and John, and then, you know, Nick would hop in here and there. And then, you know, for the second year I was there, it was all three of us. We would all train together because, you know, Nick was getting ready for the universe and John was getting ready for the nationals to try and get his pro card. And I was just like the guy that was just training with him. I didn't have a show or anything.
Okay.
And so we just fucking smashed it out. We trained together for the whole year, and it was very Dorian style. Like, we would work up to one all out set, and then sometimes we'd do a back off set.
Okay.
But it was low volume. It was really heavy. It was, you know, come on, motherfucker. It was like really hardcore. And we trained like that, the whole year. And, Nick won his class at the worlds and John won the nationals. So it, you know, I mean, the proof is in the pudding, right? You know, and then I went home from, did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Oh, you're still there.
I'm just sitting here like with a smile on my face, mouth like hanging open, just listening with wide eyes.
I had a weird, there was like a ping in my ear. I thought I lost you.
No.
So yeah, so like they went on to win shows. You know, Nick went to Europe, won his class, John won nationals. And then I went home, and I guess a year later I won the overall at the Albertas, and that kind of gave me a lifetime bite of nationals. So yeah, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. Like that type of training had all three of us win shows, within, you know, basically a 2 year period of time from each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, balls out, forced reps, heavy weights, you know, extra negatives on stuff.
Hmm.
You know, like just, it was a blood and guts video, just played in just repeat, you know? And that's how we did it back then. And, you know, you did 30 minutes of fasted cardio in the morning, and then you ate your steak and veggies and your chicken and rice and your egg whites and oatmeal. And you took your basic simple stack, and no one could afford GH anyway, so you didn't even bother. You just did the show with the fucking basics. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, we were all in super, super good condition, and it worked. You know, and I just see so many people just fucking with the formula now.
Yeah.
So, don't know what to say.
Yeah. You know, something you said was that you started out with really high volume back with the Lee Haney workouts. And at this point now, you've graduated to these really high intensity, you know, one set exercises, possibly with a back off set after that.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's something I've been trying to learn how to explain. Can you talk about how you graduated to that? What was the evolution? Because it, you know, you don't just wake up one day, I think, and go, okay, yeah, this makes sense. I'm just going to do one set. There's a progression. Right. How did that progression work for you?
Well, so it's part of it's my personality. So I remember the whole time I was working out in high school, I remember, like, you know, it'd say like 5 sets of 10 on something, right?
Yeah.
And I remember just having a hard time with the fact that there was no description as to what that 10 reps would look like on each of those 5 sets.
Okay.
I don't know. I guess I'm a real structural person in some ways.
Yeah.
So, you know, someone would say, oh yeah, I did 5 sets of 10. And I'd be like, and it would beg the question, what does that mean?
Huh?
How, like, what do you mean by 5 sets of 10? And whenever I'd read a prose program, it'd say 4 sets of 8. And I'd be like, you know, but what does that mean? And it was always a problem. And then when I first read about Dorian, you know, when he did the 91 Night of Champions and he sort of suddenly appeared in the magazines, he immediately, in like the very first article, was speaking about how his training was different.
Okay.
And I remember he addressed that directly. Like, he actually said in the article, you know, a lot of guys say they do 4 sets of an exercise, but they really only do 1 or 2 anyways.
Yeah.
And I just cut to the chase and just make sure I'm warmed up. And then I just do that one set.
Okay. So you did just directly graduate to it.
Yeah. So I just was like, and it just spoke to me because he clarified the question that I'd been like sort of unknowingly wondering. Like, I didn't understand what I was unable to figure out, but he like clarified it for me. It made sense. And I remember a lot of times I would train with people when we do volume and I would like go super hard on all the sets.
Yeah.
And I remember wondering why other people didn't do that and all this sort of stuff. It just didn't make sense to me. So then that made sense to me. And then I started reading like the Mike Mentzer quotes, you know, like Mike Mentzer had this quote, you know, if you could take a hammer and hit a nail, and if you hit it with everything you got, you hit it perfectly, the nail will go all the way into the wood.
Yeah.
If you hit it again, now you're just going to damage the wood.
Hmm.
You already got the job done. The job's done. You don't need to hit it again.
I like that analogy.
Whereas you could tap it all day and you could do like 50 taps to get it into the wood. You can do that if you want, but it's just a different way of getting the nail into the wood. And I remember just reading that analogy and it like rattled around in my head. And then, I just immediately switched over to Dorian style training.
Yeah.
I just was like, oh, here's a program printed right here. And it was a 3-day split. So it must've been a really old program at Dorian's. It was chest and arms
okay.
on one day. And the next day was legs. And the next day was off. And then the 4th day was shoulders and arms. And then the 5th day was off.
Hmm.
So it was a five day split with 3 training days.
Okay.
And I remember that was the first Dorian program I did.
Where was back in that?
It was back and shoulders. Sorry.
Oh, back
and chest and arms. Chest and arms and back and shoulders on the 3rd training day.
Okay. That's what I thought. That's what I figured.
Yeah. Back and shoulders. So I remember I just started doing that program. And I think it was at that point in time, he was still doing 2 working sets
okay.
exercise. Cause yeah. I know he used to do that right in the early days. And, so I just started doing this program and my workouts were only like 1 hour long, even though it was like chest, thighs and tries.
Yeah.
Or like quads, hams and calves all in the same day. It only take me about 1 hour. And I remember immediately I started getting like really strong on everything.
Okay.
I remember my strength just started going up and up and up and up. And everyone at the gym was like, oh, you're getting way stronger. And so immediately I thought that just automatically, you know, would just translate to just infinite amount of endless muscle, you know?
Yeah.
So I was pretty excited. You know, I thought I found the secret and everybody else was a fucking idiot. So, so I had this idea though, like that is actually, I actually thought everyone else was super stupid for training the way they were training. I was like, man, if you just train like me, like fuck everyone in the gym seeing all these gains I'm making. Why can't they figure it out? Just watch what I'm doing. I'm training harder than everybody and I'm doing way less sets than everybody. And I just thought it was that simple. I thought it would just never end, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, you start to run into you don't grow like a teenager for the rest of your life. So I was also at that peak hormone time. I mean, I would have been 17 in grade 12. So, I mean, of course you're going to grow. Like, I was putting weight on like crazy and getting stronger all the time. And, you know, it was really, really good gains back then.
Yeah. I'm trying to sort this out in my head right now, because I went into this thinking about the benefits to training partners. And with that in mind, I've thought about like the great workouts that I have had with a really good training partner. But in the reality, I feel like I'm in the same place as you, where a lot of my training has been by myself, and I'm equally as happy to train by myself too. So now yeah. I'm kind of confused as to where we want to go with this, you know,
Maybe it's like that old rule with a marriage. You know, you can't be happy with someone until you're happy with yourself.
maybe that's it. Yeah.
And maybe there's a little bit of wisdom in that too. Like if you really, really love to train and you're willing to, you know, go to hell and back, so to speak, by yourself.
Yeah.
Then it's only at that point in time, are you worth anything to somebody serious as a training partner? And, I would never want to waste anybody's time, especially if they're trying to accomplish something great. I trained with people that didn't ever compete, like I said, but they never, like, I knew they were on board. I knew that they weren't there to talk. Like my best friend, Scott, I mean, when he was training with me, like, he's just a 180-pound guy. He's a normal dude. You know, he's like, he didn't take any gear or anything like that. He was just a normal dude. And, he'd squat to absolute failure plus forced reps, you know, but a lot of people would think, oh, I'm just here to help Ron.
Yeah.
But no, he was there to help me by going as hard as me and letting me know that there was no, like, you know, I had no room to back off because this natural guy was going to out-train me if I did.
Yeah.
You know? And, it was really good times.
That reminds me of something when you say that I think there's kind of a couple dynamics that I've experienced training. Either I'm trying to keep up with somebody who's better than me, or I'm training with somebody that I need to prove to them that I know how to lead a workout. You know, there's those two positions.
Yeah. And it's funny because I've had moments in time when I will go to train with someone and maybe we'll get into the workout and I'll think, you know what? I'm not giving this person everything I got.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'm going hard on my set, but I'm not like dialed in on the fact that I'm also involved in their workout. Hmm. And I'll try to correct that. It's, you know, sometimes you start doing something before you've really had time to sit and think about it.
Yeah.
You know, like for example, I always have the best workouts when I actually take 5 minutes to ride the bike.
Okay. You're kind of like meditating.
Yeah, it's not like riding a bike is the point. It's that I'm not doing anything else. I'm just sitting on the bike. I'm just thinking. I got my music already playing, so now that's already starting to trigger things because my brain is very musically oriented. You know, my certain music I put on just turns me into a training machine, right?
What do you like? Give me an example.
Well, I listen to the same music I listened to when I was competing my whole life. You know, I listen to, you know, Tool, AC/DC, Chevelle, Metallica. I put on like just all that old, I'll put on Nirvana Live, listen to that stuff. I'll put on like, you know, I like rough, raw, loud concert, DVDs and music. So I listen to a lot of that stuff.
Nice.
That sort of shit. And I like loud guitars and, you know, I like that. So I'll put that on and that starts to get my brain going. But you know, there's those times when you walk into the gym and you're like kind of in a hurry to start.
Yeah.
And if I'm training with someone under those conditions, sometimes I forget that I'm, you know, also in their workout. So I'll try to correct that as soon as possible and get right into their workout with them. But yeah, that's one thing people don't think of. It's like, you know, if you're going to train with me, I expect you to be paying attention and I promise to do the same, you know? So, you know, there's times when I've had people I've trained with, you know, it was like the workouts were good and stuff, but you know, they would wander off and talk to somebody for a while or whatever. And I wouldn't make a conscious decision to stop training with them. It would just sort of happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I would just lose interest in training with them because I'd be like, fuck, you know, they're out there talking to somebody, you know, what's the point? And I don't know. It's like, you know, it kind of ruined the mood, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the camaraderie too. Now I'm going to take you back for a minute. You mentioned, you came back from Australia And you said you went back, and that's when you won in Alberta?
Yeah. When I came home, and that's when I like started really competing seriously, and you know, and I, you know, won that show, and that was a 99 Albertas I won.
Okay. Now, was there a gym there that you worked at? Was it called Hardcore?
Yeah. So there was a.
How do I know this, Ron?
I don't know. You know too much.
I have an inside source that you firsthand. Now, did you work there too?
No. I eventually trained clients out of there because I was there for 13 years.
Okay.
But yeah, that was just like a year or two after that. I started training at Hardcore Gym in Edmonton, and it's now a powerhouse gym. But yeah, I trained there for 13 years. So there was a lot of nonsense went on in that room.
My firsthand account was of you by the smoothie bar, holding court with like a bunch of bros that are eating their post workout meals and just hanging on every word of your stories. Does that sound familiar?
That is possible. That definitely would have happened there. That definitely would have happened there for sure. Because, I don't know. That place was home to me for a long time, and I pretty much knew everybody that was in there. And a lot of people came to me for advices.
Yeah.
So we'll say that.
I like that. We're going to pull that out. We're going to pull that out and put that somewhere. I don't know
where. Did someone send that in to you?
No, Victoria Falkar. She said. She said she knew you back then, huh?
Yeah. That's funny. I've known her for a long time. So that's funny. Yeah. There's a lot of people that could have had that same story.
So. I bet that was probably an everyday thing. Anybody who came in that gym at that time could have probably had that story.
Yeah, I was just lucky. Like, I started going to the Olympia in 2002.
Okay.
And, that was just less common. Like, you know, now it's like, so many people go, but back then I was like, people would be like, oh my God, you went to the Olympia, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you come back with all these stories, right? So there's that stuff too. And, I knew a lot of the pros. I was kind of lucky. Like, you know, I remember the 2002 Olympia, I went and had lunch with Tom Prince, you know, Tom Prince having lunch and, you know, like people walking by and, you know, he's introducing me to fucking Bob. Like I get to meet Bob and like we're chatting, you know, it's just funny. Like I knew a lot of those guys so long ago.
That's so cool, man. I guess, you know, the reason I really wanted to bring you on to talk about this is because it's something about the fellowship of the training partners. And sometimes it's not even the guys you train with. Sometimes it's, you know, sitting around and eating your food afterward. There's a camaraderie of people that are doing, you know, that are training as hard as they can and putting their really like your heart and soul into your workouts. There's like this unset bond almost that I feel like that we can have. And I feel like that's kind of what you are cultivating at West Coast Iron too. That's just the vibe I get, man, that you're building that there.
Well, that's just been an awesome project. I mean, I never thought opening a gym would be so much work. I can't imagine having done it myself. Because I got four partners, like there's five of us that opened that gym.
Wow.
And with five of us, it was like, you know, an enormous amount of work. You know, we all have full-time jobs and other stuff going on and businesses and stuff to run. And, you know, two of the guys have kids and wives and, you know, that sort of shit. So, you know, there's so much else going on, but we managed to make that gym happen. And it's been fantastic. But yeah, it's the training environment there is really good. And I mean, obviously, I'd like to think I contributed to it hugely. I think that's just natural. If you're going to open a gym, you really hope that, you know, you can have a little bit of yourself in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and every time I'm in there training, I mean, there's been some days when I think, you know, I mean, everyone has those days, you know, even when you're at your most motivated and you're heavily competing and all that, you still have those days when you really got to drag one out, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, sometimes I'll have those days where I'm super tired from work or so much I'm going on the go. And, you know, I look around the room and I'm like, I have to train hard because, you know, if I'm not going to train hard, I'll just stop my workout because, you know, I don't want anyone in here to see me fucking, you know, pussying out because, you know, my name's on the fucking place, you know, like there's a little bit of you know, nonsense, pride goes into every workout at that gym because I know that, you know, there might be a young guy watching me do a set and I think, fuck, you know, this guy's got, you know, I don't want to let this guy down. Or there might be someone that has asked me for advice that's spotting me, because I know they all, everyone hops in and spots me and stuff. It's pretty cool.
That is cool.
So, you know, I just like, fuck, I got to give her, you know, I'd rather not train than go in there and, you know, do it, be an 8-9-10-er.
Yeah.
Which is my little nickname for people that just do 8-9-10 and then rack the bar.
I like that. That's real good.
You know, don't be an 8-9-10-er, you know, and I don't want anyone to see me ever being an 8-9-10-er, you know, it's just never been my thing. It's not what I preach. And, so I just, you know, I try to, I guess, you know, sounds silly to say it, but you feel like you're maybe helping to set an example when you go out on the floor and put your headphones on and get going.
Man, I feel like that's something we should all be taking home right now, especially those of us who have been doing this for a while. And I feel like that relates to when I was talking about, you know, having training partners that are looking up to you, that you want to be able to give it your all. There's been this term, I feel like everybody started using this, that you don't just go in the gym to do face pulls, you know. It's face pulls, for some reason, they've gotten a bad name, I think. Everybody who says just doing face pulls, it's like the equivalent of just doing biceps nowadays. But,
right,
yeah,
right.
You know, you're not just going in there to do face pulls. You really want to, I don't know, man, I really want to put in everything I have into every workout. There's something special about it. Tom Platt said that we are... what was it? It was like that we are artists and we express ourselves through our sets and our reps. And I want to try to stay plugged into that. I feel like training partners for me, they help me with that. Cause if it is somebody that's looking up to me, I want to make sure that I am putting that into it. And if it's somebody that I look up to, I want to make sure I'm proving it to them that I can hang, you know?
Yeah, no, totally. And you know what? Some people might think that's, you know, silly or whatever, but it's, you're trying to contribute to the culture that I'm trying to contribute to the culture that gave me everything I have in my life. Anyways, like my life without bodybuilding, I don't even have a fucking idea what that, it would be completely different. Like there's nothing about me that would be the same. I wouldn't even be, I might even be the same person politically. Who knows? Like my life without bodybuilding would change every single aspect of me. So, you know, you want to kind of give back to it in a positive way. And, you know, the gym has been a real big part of me sort of realizing like, oh, here's an avenue where I can really do a lot. You know, I mean, we try to do it on our Instagram and we try to contribute, you know, when we make a comment on something, we try to contribute when we do our thing, you know, in the industry with our companies and the different things we work for. You know, you're doing the podcast, a huge contribution, giving people a voice. And, you know, so everyone's always looking for a way that they can, even if you don't know it, you're looking for a way that you can contribute. And when we opened the gym, you know, it was just something I was super drawn to. And it wasn't until it was already open and it was already operating where I realized, I was like, oh shit, like yeah, I can affect a lot of people with this, you know, actually affect them, like, you know, real change, you know?
Yeah.
And it's been cool because like, there's been guys that have like moved already. I mean, I joked that I wanted people to move to train at that gym.
You said that. It's happening. Okay, you said that like when we first started, when you first had opened it, we recorded. Wow, that's happened, man.
Yeah, like this guy's like, oh man, you know, I want to do my contest prep. And I thought, fuck, you know, I'm doing contract work right now and I'm using my laptop, so it doesn't matter where I live. So I'm just going to fucking move out here for a few months.
That is badass, man.
And, you know, he's, you know, he got a place close to the gym and he's doing his prep at the gym because he doesn't like, you know, he wants to. And so I was like, fuck, this cool, you know, people doing that sort of stuff. So it's, you know, you just try to make an environment like maybe there'll be a really great pro bodybuilder come out of there now, you know, and that's that's just the cumulative effect of that'll happen over decades is, you know, I really hope to see stuff like that, you know.
Okay.
So.
Well, listen, I wasn't sure what we were going to get out of this. This was kind of an experiment using this as a topic, but I feel like we got to it. And that is that this is even down to your sets and your reps. It, how you train is a contribution to bodybuilding. If you're being mindful of it, I like that a lot, man.
Yeah. That's a good message to kind of round up with is, you know, that your workout might affect someone else in a positive way. And, you know, every time I walk into a gym, I take it real personal. Like, I don't know if that's, like I said, maybe I have some crazy ego issues I have to deal with. Maybe that's a few $1,000 worth of therapy to figure that out. But you know, I do, like, every time I walk into a gym, I think, you know, there's, you know, I don't want to say something to prove, because that's sort of the sort of young, aggressive football player type of mindset, which isn't what I have at this point.
Right.
But, you know, there's just something I want to leave behind, I guess, you know? So yeah, it does matter. And it does sort of kind of occur to me in a way, you know?
Yeah. Well, and hopefully everybody listening to this, it's going to occur to them a little bit more now too. I feel like, if anything, I want to be more aware of what I'm doing in my life. There's nothing worse than the feeling of walking out of the gym and I realize that, you know what, I didn't really give my all in that. You know, at the same token, there's nothing more amazing than feeling like I just left it all on the floor, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Like, I saw a kid, there's a kid that trains at my gym. You know, I mean, I would have met him when he was about 16, and now I think he's like 20. And I saw him the other day doing a drop set on the pendulum squat.
Yeah.
He had a buddy giving him forced reps and pulling plates off. And when he was doing his negatives, he was going down, like, you know, when you get into the really hard part of the set.
Yeah.
And there's this point in the set where the reps start to get hard.
Okay.
And when that happens, I see immature people, they start rushing the reps.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But mature people who really are there to train, they actually start slowing them down and making them more painful.
You embrace it.
You embrace it. You're like, okay, here, I'm at the hard part now. Let's see how fucking bad I can make this negative hurt.
This is where it really starts.
Yeah, and they take it down almost a little slower and almost sit into the hole and then drive up, and it's an even harder rep. And they, you know, and I saw him doing that.
Yeah.
And I thought, fuck, you know, this kid's come a long ways, and it's because he trains in this room. Like, he used to train at the old gym that was in there. And now it's, you know, West Coast now for a year and a half, and he's been there the whole time. And so he's training like that now. And I like to think that it's because of where he trains.
Yeah.
He sees that happening. He's plugged into it. It's, you know, it's, or at least partially because of where he trains, you know, like that's the type of stuff that kind of infects other people. And you start getting more guys training like that. They start getting more results, and you know, that it's just how it works.
Yeah, that's something else, man. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk about this with me, because like I said, I knew if we started this conversation up that it was gonna go somewhere, and it ended exactly where I would want it to end, man. So I appreciate your time, man. This is cool.
It went pleasantly sideways.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, man. I appreciate it, Scott. Anytime. And I look forward to chatting with you on your advices radios.
Well, listen,
in the future,
and plug everything for me, Mutant and the gym and everything else.
Yeah, so I'm still at Mutant. Everything's going really good. Obviously, we just did the Arnold. I got lots of filming and more trips coming up this year. Hit me up on Instagram, Rep300. And of course, you know, I never really push it, because I sort of get lots of business on its own, but I do work with people and I am taking clients.
Nice.
And I've got guys getting ready for all sorts of pro qualifier shows and, you know, entry level shows. And I had a friend of mine that I always helped. He was going to do a pro show this year, but unfortunately he tore his bicep about halfway into prep. He had that fixed. It's a great fix, so it's going to look fine.
Nice.
So he's going to be okay, but that, you know, kind of annexed the plan for the pro show. So I've got guys getting ready for shows all over the place, and a few key ladies as well.
Nice.
You know, I'm pretty picky about who I work with, and I see a lot of girls competing that maybe shouldn't be because of their current metabolic situation or whatever. Mm. But yeah. I like to help people where if I feel I can help you, I will take you.
It's not a
personal thing. It doesn't matter how good you are.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what show you're getting ready for. I don't give a shit if you got great genetics. It's about, you know, kind of how we sort of click when we talk and what your goals are. And, so yeah, you can always hit me up, and, you know, everything's going great. West Coast Iron, follow my gym, check it out. And, you know, I'm just happy to be on the show.
Hell yeah. Do you remember the guy's name offhand who moved to be by your gym?
Yeah, Nick.
Nick. Let's give a shout out to Nick.
Shout out to Nick.
For being a badass,
bet,
Nick.
Being a badass. Yeah, you bet, man.
All right, guys. For another episode of Advices Radio with Big Ron Partlow, I'm Scott McNally. We will see you soon. Thanks, Ron.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.